Common law, you know what the punishment is for first-time burglary under common law? We know it's 30 days under statutory, don't we? Death. You get executed. It's a capital offense. Okay? Have you ever been burglarized? You ask anybody who's been burglarized, do you feel violated? Do you want to kill somebody? You bet. Well, under the common law, that's how it worked. So, anyway, sovereignty, it's the power to do everything in a state without accountability. So, in the United States, the accountability does not exist unless the other sovereigns get mad at you. Okay? Who are the other sovereigns? Well, they're the members of the jury. A jury of peers. Do you know what peers are? Huh? No, it's not your equals. Not at all. Never meant that. A jury of peers means a jury composed of members of the peerage. The peerage is the sovereignty. Okay? Back before we had the 14th Amendment, everybody except the slaves was a sovereign. So when you had a jury, you had a jury of your fellow peers. Sure, they were your equals, but they were equal because they were sovereign too. No, doesn't have to be family related. Just it's they're sovereigns. They're noble. They're the members of the nobility, the peerage. So since they were members of the peerage and you were too automatically, in the United States, since everybody was a sovereign, everybody got judged by their equals, right? Now, here's what happened one time. Kind of cute. Now they try to compose jurors of citizens of the United States, which is interesting because there was a case in San Diego about a dozen years ago or so, I forget. I heard about it. I should have gone and verified it. But anyway, this guy was accused of something and he demanded a jury of his peers. And nobody who got into the jury would admit that he was not a citizen of the United States. Nobody would admit that he was above the government. They were all law-abiding citizens, right? So finally, the accused insisted on a jury of his peers and made it clear to the judge he knew what a peer was. So the judge finally ordered the sheriff of San Diego County to go out and find some peers. And he had to report back. He couldn't find any, and he had to dismiss the case against him. So, okay, it's kind of fun here. Now, you see, when we broke away from England, we had an attitude. Okay? The attitude was, we're sovereign. They understood it back then quite well. It's because of our educational system from the 1850s to the 1950s, from the time they instituted that first public school till the end in 1950, when they stripped out, or they actually phased out, everything relating to civics, the study of personal rights. And so they've changed a lot of attitudes. I've noticed about roughly 30 years ago that they've been implementing the visual signs of lack of sovereignty on the part of the citizens. How do I know? Well, let me tell you this. You go to England or you watch on TV any proceeding that involves the sovereignty, the Queen of England. Or if you look at a no parking sign on the street, you'll see that there's a stripe that goes across. And the stripe goes visually from your upper left to your lower right as you see it. That stripe signifies a command of the sovereignty. It's what you do. Most people are right-handed. So when you go into battle, you reach across your body and you grab your sword. That's the sign of power. And you draw out your sword with your right hand, if you're right-handed, which most people were. And so in heraldry, it reflects that. Well, guess what? Our ties that men wore reflect that. That's the tie of a sovereign. Okay? All the ties in the United States, or 99% of them, were that way. It's a symbol of sovereignty. About 20 years ago, I noticed that they were phasing out this type of tie and phasing in neutral ties. Till finally, about 10 years ago, you couldn't find anything but neutral ties, pretty much. Well, there's a few, okay, but of the sovereign ties, but most of them were neutral. Now I've noticed in the next 10 years, they phased in stripes going the other way. That's what they wear in England when they're subjects of the Queen. You go to Bullock's or these places and try to find a tie with stripes like that they go on my tie. You can't find them, or you're lucky if you do. If you want to find one of these ties, go to a thrift store. Okay? It's significant. When I go to court, I always wear a striped tie. Why? Because if I wear a tie going the other way, I might have some bad luck and run into a judge who knows that little fact. And he might make a... You see, we communicate with words. We communicate with signs and symbols, too. And so most judges are ignorant of this. They have no idea about heraldry. So it doesn't make a hill of beans of difference what tie I wear. But I'll tell you something. If the other guy sees me... You see, wearing a tie like this, okay, I'm wearing a tie. Wearing the other tie, if the other guy knows, he knows I'm ignorant. So I can't tell him what my knowledge is, but I certainly can portray my ignorance if I'm not careful. So when you go to court, I recommend that everybody pay attention to some of these other traditions that are hundreds of years old, because some people in those courts are educated and do know. It's just a subtle thing, doesn't make or break the case, but it might make or break an attitude. Okay, so now you can be a sovereign for some purposes and not a sovereign for others. Where do I get that from? Well, it turns out there are some cases, a few, but my favorite case is this one right here. Reservation of sovereignty. Oh, here's that other case. Sovereignty means that the decree of sovereign makes law. So the government code informs the judge who's working for the government that I don't yield my sovereignty to him. And then I have this case here of the Moscow Fire Insurance Company of Moscow, Russia versus the Bank of New York. Okay, and that they said that's what sovereignty means. The decree of the sovereign makes law. So I couple them together. You want to know what the law is, Judge? Just ask me. Okay? All right. So, likewise, up above, the very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign makes law. More of the same. But here's an interesting case. Reservation of sovereignty. I'll tell you in business English what happened. The Indian tribe entered into a contract with a corporation to do some mining. The corporation brought in all the equipment, set it up after they made their contract, and they were going to split the profits, okay? So they're extracting the minerals and hauling them off the Indian reservation to do whatever they do with mine stuff. Okay, everything's going fine, okay? One day, the tribal council said, you know, we should establish an extraction tax. An extraction tax. You know? Yeah, depletion tax, whatever you want to call it. Anyway, they decided to tax everything that got mined out of there. Well, the corporation screamed to high heaven on that one. They said, hey, you know, we have a contract. You agreed to your share of the profits, and all you're doing is cutting yourself a bigger share. Well, it ended up in the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, too bad. They're sovereign. They have a right to tax. Okay? And you're going to like this statement, which they said, which I have here. Okay. It is one thing to find that the tribe has agreed to sell the right to use the land and take valuable minerals from it, and quite another to find that the tribe has abandoned its sovereign powers simply because it has not expressly reserved them through a contract. Do you now understand why it is you can have a Social Security number and still retain your sovereignty? Okay? That's the linchpin case for us. Okay? Because look, that statutory law, I know some guys who are really, really sharp on it. And I have a problem with that. The problem is that I'm lazy. I can't deal with it. I don't want to spend, I've already spent my thousands of hours in the law library. And I just can't deal with this. You know, I can't know everything. I don't want to know everything. So, here's the loophole. This is what gets me out of it. Hey, I can be a sovereign for some purposes, a citizen for other purposes, and the choice is mine. And just because I signed a contract doesn't mean that I gave everything up. Okay? Just because I failed to reserve my sovereignty doesn't mean that it's lost. So that's kind of a nice one. I guess we can skip over that. There's more detail, but let's go on to something else. Okay, Bill of Rights. Anybody ever heard of the Second Amendment? Yeah, I think a few of you have. Well, guess what? Amendments not available to U.S. citizens. Right to keep and bear arms. Think about it. Think about it. What does the Second Amendment say? It talks about people, doesn't it? It doesn't talk about citizens. Citizens are subject to the jurisdiction. The government is subject to the people's jurisdiction. So, you have a right. Well, let's put it this way. Your rights are anything you say they are if you are a people. But if you're a citizen of the United States, then you have no rights. All you have is privileges granted by the government. But let me warn you, or actually alert you, if everybody were told that, hey, you've got privileges, you don't have any rights, do you think there would be a reaction among the citizens? Oh, yeah, there would be. Yeah, there would be. No, that could be built up if they were all told that. So they're not told that, okay? You've never heard the government say that point blank. Well, I mean, you might have, but as a general rule, when you look at the propaganda that comes out, it's always, they never say that, okay? They never say, oh, you just have privileges, and we'll pick and choose what privileges you should have, okay? No, what they do is these privileges have been repackaged with a different title. They're called civil rights. Okay? You see, when you're in your sovereign capacity, all rights that you choose are yours. But if you're a citizen of the United States, or a citizen of a state for that matter, you are subject. A citizen has an obligation he owes to the city, to the municipal law. And the United States statutes are municipal law. Okay, all statutes are municipal law. So you have duties you owe. And so you have, quote, civil rights, meaning they grant you certain privileges because they know darn well there'd be a revolution if they didn't. Okay? But little by little, they squeeze down. They change the educational system. How can you claim your rights if you don't know to claim them, if you don't know what they are or how to go about it? So they teach everybody. Do they ever teach you what a people is in school? No, but they sure taught you what a citizen was, didn't they? And when you go into court and you say, I'm a citizen of the United States, right away, they know they got you because you're in the jurisdiction. You've admitted it just by that phrase alone. Okay? There's other things here. On the left of this chart, you have amendments available to the U.S. citizens. Believe me, they're available because they're legislated, not because of the Bill of Rights. Bill of Rights has absolutely nothing to do with the citizens. Okay? They say it's available. Now, where did I get this from? I got it out of a book. The title of it is The Constitution of the United States of America, analysis, and interpretation. Okay? It's about a 2,700-page book when you have all the amendments and stuff in it. Okay? And that book is included in this CD. We have reference law books that are included in the CD. Let me show you some of them. Here it is. The Constitution of the United States of America, Analysis and Interpretation. That has it. It tells the truth. That book is printed by the Congress, by the House. And then a free copy is given to every congressman, or I mean every representative. It's given to every senator. And a free copy is given to the Vice President of the United States. The President of the United States has to buy his copy. Or maybe the executive branch will buy it. But only the Congress and the Vice President. Why is it that the Vice President gets a free copy, but the President doesn't? He's the President of the Senate. Exactly. He's part of the Congress. There's some cross-linking there in order to make sure that although there's a separation of powers, they didn't want them too separated. Okay? It's really an interesting compromise they did when they constructed this Constitution. Okay. So that book is given out. It has the truth in it. An interesting thing is, I took the 1938 issue of this. It's published on average, and this is just an average, once every 10 years. It might go 20 years without publishing, okay? But there's been a series of them. I looked at the 1938 edition, and I compared it to the next edition, whenever it was, some 10 years later or so. And they were pretty much the same, except for one thing. All the common law references in the index only were stripped out. There was like a full page of references to common law that you could look up. You won't find them. Now, in the body of the book, it's all there. But they took it out of the index. What are they doing? Information control, right? Okay. The attorneys look it up. It's not there. What do they know? Okay, we have Title IV, got Title 18 United States Code, Title 28 United States Code, got the Act of the Confederation, so if you want to know what the original United States was, there it is, Northwest Ordinance. You got the 1849 and the 1879 Constitutions. Let's just check the preamble for a moment. Oops, something happened. Uh-oh, I might have given you a defective copy. Too bad. However, if you go into the CD, you'll find it in there somewhere. Maybe the 1849 Constitution is there. No? Okay, well, it's in there, but I guess we also have the Anti-Government Movement Guidebook. This is a book specifically written by judges for judges because they're trying to figure out how to control us, how to get around our arguments. It's good reading. And what you're going to find, don't be surprised, what you're going to find is they don't really understand either. So there isn't a big scheme on the part of the judges against you. They just naturally are against you. Okay? They're not that well organized, and that becomes apparent when you read the Anti-Government Movement book. You can see these judges are, I mean, it's their book. So let's see. back to the law notes. Are you following me so far? I hope. All right. By the way, the website was featured on Rush Limbaugh's site of the week. He was up there for 7 days. It's kind of nice. Okay. Republic versus democracy. Am I in trouble? Okay. All right. All right, that's a good sell. Oh. Okay. You want to take a break for 10 minutes? Okay, let's do that. Then we'll tell some more after that. Okay, thank you. The question was, a judge decreed that rights and privileges are the same. Do you know how that affects us? Well, if you let him be in charge, it affects you any way he wishes it to. On the other hand, if you're in charge, you say that's frivolous. That's what they do, right, when they're in charge. It's frivolous. You know? Hey, well, in fact, that brings out another point. Capitalization of the name. Okay? Anybody heard that one? Okay. Now, I'm not saying that that's an invalid concept. As a matter of fact, I've actually seen the Texas law that says that if you don't, something to the effect that if you don't say you're not a corporation, the presumption is that you are. Or words to that effect. I don't have it down accurately. But see, when it's my court, it's my discretion too, isn't it? I'll lay down the rules. Hey, if you don't want the word customer used in your court, that's fine. Okay, let's... so anyway, caps versus lowercase, that's my position is that if I'm doing the judging, then it doesn't make a hill of beans difference to me, not in my kingdom or my court. All right, let's go on to the let's see, republic versus democracy. I'm not going to spend much time on this, but I do want to get some basic things explained about it. Okay, basically, let me explain a republic by first explaining a democracy. Okay, in a democracy, we've all been taught 51 beats 49, right? So that means that the majority wins and the minority loses. Okay, well, that's perfectly clear to me. That means the minority has no rights. They can't exist in a democracy. So all these clowns running around here demanding democracy, they should be careful what they wish for. Because democracy means the majority wins, and whatever privileges the majority grants to the minority, it's purely at the will and pleasure of the majority. Okay, that's a pure democracy. In a democracy, if we look here in the dictionary, I got this out of I think it's Black's Law Dictionary. It says, here we go, democracy. It's that form of government in which the sovereign power resides in and is exercised by the whole body of free citizens, directly or indirectly through a system of representation, as distinguished from others. Okay, got that? The whole body. In other words, you have this big argument, big difference of opinion, you vote on it. Whatever the group says in the voting process, that's the law. And everybody now is subject to the law, even the ones that voted for it. Okay? So the sovereignty only exists in the entire body of the citizens, but not in the individual citizens. So 51 beats 49, the sovereignty is in the body. Whatever the issues are, they vote on it. Now everybody's subject to it. You have no choice. No rights for the minority at all. And the majority doesn't need rights because things are all going their way anyway. Okay? Contrast that with the Republican form of government. Republican form of government is one in which the powers of sovereignty are vested in the people. Remember, that can be singular as well as plural. And are exercised by the people either directly or through representatives chosen by the people. Okay? Now, my position is I own the government. I'm really not against the vehicle code. What I am against is the abuse of power. And I think it's a very reasonable rule that everybody should drive on the right side instead of the left side, that everybody should stop at the stop sign. That's pretty reasonable to me. It's also reasonable to me that you don't stop at a stop sign if you can see clearly in all directions. Nobody's there for, you know, so go on through. But as a general rule of thumb, I'll stop at a stop sign, partially because of the threat of the citizen cops, you know, partly because I think it's reasonable anyway. But I own it, so therefore I hired these guys to work out some rules. you know, maybe I wasn't personally there, but the people hired them. And so they came up with a system of rules, and they said, this is how we're going to run things. And that's great. But the thing is that, notice this. It says, a Republican government is one in which the powers of sovereignty are vested in the people and exercised by the people, either, and here's the key, directly or through representatives. So, I hire the representatives, they create a system of courts, okay? And these courts conduct the cases, right? Because I created this system, I'm one of the people, I've created it, and it's a good system, I like it. Sometimes. But you know, in my sovereign capacity, as I look over this system that I own, sometimes some issues are simply too important to leave to judges. Okay? Some things are too important, like individual rights. So what I do in order to do that is I exercise my power directly instead of through my representatives. I open up my own court. Okay? That's what a republic is. In a republic, the minority is important. What does sovereignty mean? It means no higher authority. The sovereign decrees the law. Now, when I go to court, I'm not subject to others. Why does it take a jury in America, in a criminal jury, why is it that it takes 100% of the jurors to get a conviction? Well, very simple. You take a jury consisting of 12 people, theoretically, now this is all theory, but it's how we did things, okay? We basically have said that each juror represents 1/12 of society. Now, there's many ways to compose a juror. In Athens, in Greece, a jury consisted of 1,000 people, the theory being that there wasn't anybody rich enough to bribe 1,000 jurors. Okay, that's why they had such large juries then, and that's how Socrates got convicted in one of those juries. But in America, we have decided, for whatever reason, that 12 is the magic number instead of 1,000. And we've said it has to be all 12. Why? Because if you have 11 people saying guilty, and you have one saying not guilty, what you're really saying is that 1/12 of society agrees with you as in accordance with their representative. That one juror is a representative of 1/12 of society. And so, if you can convict on 11-1, what you're saying is that 1/12 of society has an opinion that is not important. That's 1/12. That's 8.5% or 8 1/3%, something like that. Okay? Yeah, it's 8 1/3%. So you're saying 8 1/3% they're not significant. If you can convict on 10-2, which is what some states I think actually do now, we're saying that 16 2/3% of society doesn't count. Well, now you have a democracy. See? Okay, so in a republic, in your sovereignty is absolutely unassailable except under one condition. And that condition is that if you get 100% of society against you, you're done for. Okay? But as long as you can get one juror representing that segment of society in a republic, you're covered. That's for criminal type stuff. Okay? Now, that's just a quick trip on that, because we have something far more important to get into, and that is a court of record. Okay, I'm going to skip the California Admission to Union. We have a court. Let me explain what a court is. There's this article about a court. You should read and read it. It's very important that you understand what a court is. I'm going to distill this article into one short sentence. A court is a stage upon which the sovereign conducts his show to convince the rest of the world that he's right. That's what a court really is. You can give me all the court rules and everything like that, but the number one question you should keep in mind as you're conducting your court proceedings is, what will other people think? See, that's the ultimate criteria. It's not a legal criteria, but it's a practical criteria. So make sure that when you conduct your proceedings, when you look at these papers, did you notice when I flashed the example on there how much it looked like an ordinary court paper? I mean, it had the headings on it, everything in place, there was no capitals, there was no screaming on paper. Did you notice that? It was all very, just like an attorney had written it. That's good, because you want them to think an attorney wrote it. You want to make that impression. But there are certain key things in there that make the difference between my papers and an ordinary set of papers from an attorney, and that is, number one, I'm a people, and number two, I'm in a court of record, which I'm going to explain the court of record. Okay, but right now I'm not talking about a court of record. I'm talking about the generic court. A court is a place where you put on a show. You're the sovereign, you want to put on a good show. All right? You're the king, you're sitting on your throne, and you see some knave outside through the window stealing oranges off your orange tree. Okay? What some kings would do is they just send the guards out, grab and throw them into the dungeon. No problem. That's it. All right? Well, the problem is that on visiting day, the prisoner's brother visits him, and the prisoner tells him, you know, I was treated unfair, I didn't really do it, and tells a convincing story to his brother, and his brother says, you know, don't worry, he says, I'll take care of you, bro. I'm the chief cook. I can deal with this problem. And the next day you have a dead king. Okay? So, we come up with a court procedure. Replay this example. The king's sitting on his throne, he looks out the window, he sees some knave stealing oranges off his orange tree. Sends the guard out, brings him in, and they put him in temporary custody, and they say, okay, everybody, make the announcement, we're going to have a trial. This guy, the king thinks he did something wrong. We're going to have this trial, everybody's invited, all the courtiers come in. Now, back in those days, they didn't know how to read or write, unless you were a priest. And so the members of the court were the memory of the court. They've been replaced by 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper. But the sheets of paper we file today are the replacement for the courtiers that were in the king's court. So the form is different, but in substance, that's the memory of the court, see? So you have the trial. Everybody attends the trial. The brother of the prisoner is there too. He looks it over. He sees all the evidence presented, you know, and the cogitation that goes on, and the king's just kind of rubbing his head, you know. Anyway, come to decision, he's guilty, and then we have a little book here for certain types of crimes. You have to serve so much time, and he goes back into the dungeon, just like before. Now visiting day comes, and he tells a good story to his brother about how unfairly he was treated, but his brother says, you know, bro, he says, you went looking for trouble and you found it. I was at the trial. I saw the evidence. So the king lives to another day, doesn't he? That's why you have a court. You're putting on a show. I mean, the bad guy knows he was bad. The good guy knows he was good. You know what the answer should be. So that's why you have the court, is because, and you're in your sovereign capacity, you could order him to be thrown in, but you want to put on a good show because you don't want to have hidden resistance. I know people who have judgments that can't get them enforced, okay? Because they put on a bad show and the sheriff refuses to enforce them. You give the sheriff an order of execution on a judgment, default maybe, or something, whatever. And so the sheriff is against you, so the sheriff calls ahead to the guy he's supposed to arrest or grab his car or whatever, and he says, I'm coming over in a half hour. Are you going to be there? The guy says, yeah. So the sheriff goes there, the guy's not there. So he goes, well, I couldn't find him. Ever had that happen? You ever hear that happening on judgments? It does. Okay, so you want to put on a good show. You want to convince everybody that, you got a real case here. So don't get wild in your papers. Just make it look normal, but don't give up your rights. Okay, retain your sovereignty and stay in a court of record. All right, now that's what I'm going to talk about next. You're going to love a court of record. All right, I told you there's five requirements. There's 4.5, actually, because the fifth requirement is optional. The fifth requirement is that the court has to have a seal. It doesn't have to have a seal, but it generally has a seal. Okay? You know what a seal is. You crimp the paper with it or stamp and it says seal. Okay, that's an optional requirement. Now, if you look in Black's Law Dictionary, 5th edition, it tells you right there the two requirements of a court of record. Number one, it has the power to fine or jail for contempt. And number two, it keeps a record of the proceedings. Okay? And I love this because I love that 5th edition and later. I like these attorneys who are always up on the latest, you know? They got the latest materials and so forth. Because I say, I'm one of the people, and in this court of record, complain of whatever. All right? Now, so if an attorney should happen to be sharp enough to detect that, which they aren't, I haven't met one yet that I found out was, but if he happened to be sharp enough, he'd do the right thing. He'd go to his dictionary, he'd look it up, and there it would be. Court of record, power to fine or contempt, and keeps a record of proceedings. No problem, slam it shut, move forward. What's the rest of the complaint say? All right? Well, you're about to find out what he missed. Here's a court of record, the five requirements. I told you about number five, generally has a seal. I told you about number one, keeps a record of the proceeding. And I told you about number four, power to fine or imprison for contempt. But look at number three, proceeding according to the common law. No statutes. Got that?
Yeah.
No statutes. Look at Article 6, Section 1 of the California Constitution. It says right there, I'm summarizing it, but it is very short anyway. It says, all the courts in California are courts of record. So why are they using statutes? I'll tell you why they're using statutes. Because you agreed to it. That's why. How did you agree to it? Very simple. You failed to object. That's all. They brought it in. You didn't object. You didn't demand a court of record. You just let it flow right by. No criminal court in California is a court of record. Why? They use penal code. That's not common law. You see, it takes more than a name to make a court of record a court of record. You've got to act like a court of record. You know, just adopting a name doesn't do it. So when you see statutes being enforced, when somebody cites penal code section so-and-so, vehicle code section so, health and welfare code section so-and-so, you know you're not in a court of record. Okay? So it is proceeding according to the common law. The California Constitution recognizes the common law as the highest law. If you allow statutes to come in, you will be subjected to Civil Code Section 22.2, or is it Code of Civil Procedure 22.2? I forget which one. It's the one that says that the common law shall be the rule of decision so long as it's not repugnant to the codes. Right? You know that one? I think that you'll find that in the Code of Civil Procedure or the Civil Code, and you'll also, I believe, find it in the Penal Code. Okay? Well, how is that possible? If the Constitution of California says that the common law says that the courts are courts of record, which you now know proceed according to the common law. And by the way, lower down, the actual case sites are there, so don't worry about it. The it's a court of record, then how are they getting away with this? Well, what they do, well, let me explain a lawsuit. In a lawsuit, you sue somebody, civil suit. Actually, a common lawsuit is not a civil suit, because a civil suit is a suit based on civil law. Okay, so it's actually common law. But anyway, you get the civil cover sheet and you fill it out as if it were a civil suit. It doesn't affect the case at all to fill out those civil cover sheets. But anyhow, you've got this common, you make this lawsuit going. Now I forgot my point I was going to make. Sorry. It'll come back to me in a moment.
You're suing me.
Yeah, but I had a point to make.
Yeah.
It'll come back. Anyway, let's go on to point number two. This is the killer point. This is the one everybody's going to get up and cheer, I hope. In a court of record, the tribunal is independent of the magistrate. Now, let me explain what a tribunal is. A tribunal is the one who does the judging. Now, what's a magistrate? Well, if you look in the penal code, it tells you all judges of all the courts are magistrates. That means they can't do any judging. They're not tribunals. The tribunal has to be independent of the magistrate. California Constitution says all the courts are courts of record. Court of record, the tribunal is independent of the magistrate. You see that judge doing a decision up there, you know you're not in a court of record. So there's two points against it. Number one, the judge is making decisions. Number two, he's using statutory law or codes or admiralty law or anything else you want, but not common law. Okay? So hold their feet to the fire. I want a common law court. Okay? Make your charges. This brings it back to basics. But actually, I don't wait that long. Before, if there were a criminal charge pending against me, I'd do what's called a counterclaim. A counterclaim is different from a countersuit. In a countersuit, you kind of balance things. You say, well, okay, A is suing B and B is suing A. The judge sits there in the middle and he just kind of totals it up and, you know, comes up with a difference, and whoever got that difference, that's the winner. And he awards that. That's a countersuit. A counterclaim, first of all, your counterclaim is based on jurisdiction. You're challenging jurisdiction. And you won't have any trouble finding case law on this. It is solid, absolutely solid case law that when the issue of jurisdiction is raised, the court must prove its jurisdiction before it can proceed. You're familiar with that, right? Okay. Must prove its jurisdiction. It cannot assume the jurisdiction. It cannot, you're going to love this. One judge, I said, oh, what's your jurisdiction? And he said, my jurisdiction? My rope's my jurisdiction. That's proof? Well, I had to admit the facts were correct. He did have a robe, you know. But, you see, jurisdiction must be proven. And if he does anything, if he does not prove it, what is he doing? He's committing a fraud upon the court, isn't he? Because the judge is not the court. You ask any attorney, what's the difference between a court and a judge? And say, well, they're really about the same. Not really a difference. The heck there isn't. What is a court? The definition of a court. Here's the legal definition of a court. And it's in here, by the way. It is the person and the suit of the sovereign. That's a court. Okay? The plaintiff owns the court. It is the person and the suit of the sovereign. That's the first sentence you will find in Black's Law Dictionary. Well, maybe not the first. I think it's after tennis courts. Okay? The person and suit of the sovereign. The sovereign combined with his suit, those two elements make an artificial entity which is called the court. Okay? The judge is the highest officer of the court, but he is not the court. Nobody's the court. You're not the court. The sovereign's not the court. It's the sovereign combined with his suit that makes the court. Okay? when I create a court order, and you'll see samples of court orders in that example, there's actually a couple of them there, I always put in the upper left-hand corner Alternatus Privatus, which is Latin for private attorney. You look up private attorney in the dictionary, a private attorney is somebody who's an attorney for one special purpose only. You can be a private attorney, you cannot be a general attorney who is holding your services out to the public. You can't do that, but you can be a private attorney. And who are you representing? You're representing the court. The court is an artificial entity and cannot speak for itself because it has no vocal cords. Somebody has to represent this artificial entity. So you have an entity. Normally, the representative is the judge. Normally, in your customary procedures, the judge is the witness to the court's decision, and he speaks for the court because the court cannot speak for itself. That's the theory. So when I issue a court order, I appoint myself as the private attorney, and then when I sign the paper, the first line after everything is the court, because that's who's issuing the order. The court, not a human being. And then below that, I sign it with my name, and below that I put private attorney, or in Latin, alternatus privatus. This is strategy. It depends on how much I want to browbeat them, okay? Whether I use Latin or English. But the idea is that you're an attorney representing the court. Okay? So you're a private attorney. In the court, you issue that order, and now you go from there. Whenever, by the way, as a footnote, whenever I issue an order, I always make it an order to show cause as well, in addition to the order. So if I order something, I also say, or show cause why this court order is not proper, or why it shouldn't be executed, or whatever. Then I'll tell you, of all the orders that I've been involved in, not once have they ever shown cause. Never filed a paper. Never said a word. Okay? Well, they did say a word. I have to admit that in the transcripts we got it in here. The court said, well, we have a difference of opinion. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so you see, a court of record is very, very well defined. First of all, you start off with a court. It's the person in suit of the sovereign. But then that's just a court in general. Now we get down to specifics, a court of record. A court of record. Keeps a record of the proceedings. Tribunals independent of the magistrate, proceeding according to the common law, power to fine or imprison for contempt, and generally has a seal. Okay? You see why it is I'm able to bounce out a judge's order? Now, you cannot do that if you're a defendant. You can only do that if you're a plaintiff. So take notice. If there's anybody here that's asleep, wake up. Okay? Somebody asleep back there? Make sure she knows. If you're a defendant, you cannot issue any orders. Not at all. Do not issue any orders if you're a defendant. Before issuing any orders, convert yourself into a plaintiff. Then issue the order. How do you do that? With a counterclaim. Okay? In other words, you're suing. In your counterclaim, what are you doing? You're suing because they exceeded their jurisdiction. You're challenging the jurisdiction. They are obligated to explain themselves. They have to prove their jurisdiction. And who do they have to prove it to? They have to prove it to your court. Okay? They have to satisfy you. Now, don't be frivolous. Remember, what's the number one purpose of a court? It's to put on the show, isn't it? So don't be frivolous about throwing your weight around with your newfound powers, okay? Every order I issue is explained. Judges issue orders, but they don't explain them. They will explain them if you demand that they explain them before they issue the order. Remember that. Before they issue the order, you tell them you want the order explained. If you wait until after they issue it, they don't have to explain it. That's in the court rules. It's also in my court rules because I adopt the rules for my court. And that's a safe thing to do because, after all, who exercises discretion? Me. Okay? I think the rules are great. You read those rules. Actually, you go ahead and read those rules. You'll see that they're actually pretty reasonable. It's the abuse of discretion that's screwing things up. And so I'm very comfortable with the rules, especially if I'm the final authority. There is no appeal from my orders. If there were an appeal, then I wouldn't be a sovereign, would I? I do not yield my sovereignty to the agencies which serve me. Okay? A lot of theory here, but you got to be facile with this. You gotta have this. You know how I jump from thing to thing, and as it relates, I pull it up out of my memory. You can do that too. Let me tell you how to do it. Okay, there's a technique. It's not an easy technique, but there is a technique. What you have to do, if you want to learn this, if you want to try it out, you absolutely must teach it to someone else. The doctors, when they go through their medical education, they have a three-step process when they learn medicine. It's called see one, do one, teach one. Okay? They see a medical procedure done. In other words, somebody teaches them. Then they do it. They get the practice. And then they teach the next doctor. And it's when you teach it is when you really learn it. That's when I learned this stuff. When I was first learning it, I was struggling, just like everybody else. In fact, I'm still struggling, but that's another story. But, you know, when you may have noticed that I use the name the Nitty Gritty Law School. Well, there was a gentleman that started the Nitty Gritty Law School. His last name escapes me at the moment, Bob something or other. But he was selling some videotapes where he was covering a lot of these subjects. And when he had a heart attack and died, eventually, a couple months later, his wife called me. She was getting these questions from people who had bought the tapes, and she couldn't answer the questions. So she asked me, could I answer them for them? And I said, well, yeah, I'd be happy to, but I need a resource where I can go when I get stuck. And so she made the arrangements. There were some people, in fact, several people, and that I could call and discuss it with them and come up with answers. So over a period of about, 10 years, something like that, I got involved with about 150 different cases. So I got a lot of vicarious good experience. We made our mistakes. Some people went to jail. Other people didn't. But I learned this stuff because people asked me the questions and I was teaching it. And there's something that happens to your mind that forces you to dredge up the answers. You must absolutely work with each other. If you're going to take this disc home and study it and try to run your case from it, well, you can do some stuff, but believe me, the quality is going to be way down there. So work together in groups. Make sure you got a case, jump in and help, because the number one beneficiary when you jump in and help is going to be you. You'll be amazed at, you'll be surprised. You know what I do sometimes? You're not going to believe this. But there are videotapes of me giving, lectures from time to time. Once in a while, I'll pull out one of those tapes and watch them. I really learn a lot from those tapes. I didn't know I knew that. You forget stuff too, So, really, I can't emphasize enough, you must work together. Your group memory, somebody will remember something you forgot. Okay? The other thing is that if you do use the tapes, play them over and over again. You'd be surprised what you hear the second time through and the third time through and the fourth time through. It's just amazing what you get. So do that. Replay the tapes. Unfortunately, this tape is really limited. I've really skimmed over. I've mainly entertained you rather than giving you really good stuff, okay? Kind of open your eyes. But you really got to study that CD to get the benefit. You don't really need me if you really work together and work with that CD. So I'm just telling you, it's nice to talk, it's fun, but don't have to do that. Now, that was the chord of record, okay? That's all there is to a chord of record, but it's a very important concept, okay? Chord etiquette, very important. You never talk to the opposition. You always talk to the judge, okay? Even if you're talking to the opposition, you aim it at the judge. Okay, that's an unwritten rule of court etiquette. When the other side is presenting his story, don't shake your head, don't groan, don't show, just be like a statue. He gets his moment in court, lying through his teeth. That's what they do sometimes. Maybe all the time if they're cops, I don't know. But, you know, you'll have your say. Okay? Now, and there's more stuff in this article. Let me explain quickly what habeas corpus is. Back in the days of England, I'm not giving you a legal definition, I'm giving you the real definition of what a court is. Back in the days of England, the king had many courts. He had the common law court, the equity court, the court of the exchequer, the star chamber court, admiralty court, maritime courts, tax court. Okay, you probably heard of some of these courts. All right, now, the courts are just like bureaucracies, that's all. They like to build their empires, right? So naturally, the consequence of that is that sometimes an equity court would take a common law case, or the admiralty court would take an equity case. So what they did, they set up a system where, let's say that admiralty was cutting into equity, and you're the defendant. What you were entitled to do is you could run over, either directly or through your representative, if you're in jail, run over to the equity court and say, hey, these guys have invaded your territory. And that procedure for letting the second court know about it was called habeas corpus. So the second court became the dominant court. Okay? The second court would take the case and look at it and say, yeah, that looks like equity, that's ours. Or they'd say, no, that is admiralty, that's not our territory, and throw it back. So that was the concept of equity. It was a means of turf protection. And so, but you know how bureaucrats are. Bureaucrats, if they get the opportunity, love to stick it to their fellow bureaucrats if it means enlarging their territories, right? I mean, that's their characteristic. And so habeas corpus became a means for sticking it to the other guy. If you were not a common enemy, in other words, the second court liked you, then they'd take the case, they'd say, oh, you guys, you don't know anything about equity. You know, your area is admiralty. This should have been over here. And then just for good measure, they'd cut them loose and say, well, that case didn't even belong in here. Right? Showing up the other guys. That's if you weren't a common enemy. Now, if you were an enemy to both, if they nobody liked you, well, that didn't work. Okay? But habeas corpus is the only known right in the history of law to have grown stronger with time. All others, the government slowly encroaches, but that one grew stronger. Why? Because it had nothing to do with rights. It had to do with turf protection on the part of bureaucrats. Okay? So, that's what habeas corpus really is. I think it's habeas corpus ad subjiciendum, something like that. Okay? That's the full name. But habeas corpus is turf protection. Now, how does that apply in America? Because what they did, the two most common battling courts were law and equity. So in the United States, they combined them. Now the same judge is both a law judge and an equity judge. He was both a judge and a chancellor, because that's the proper title for an equity judge. He's a chancellor. So whether he's a judge, meaning a law judge, or he's a chancellor, meaning an equity judge, made no difference at this point. It's the same guy. As a result, 99.9% of all habeas corpus applications fail. Okay? But here's how it works with us. Once you go into common law, remember, the common law is still good here in the United States. Okay? Why? Because it's recognized by the Constitution. About 3-4 different places in the U.S. Constitution, when it uses the word law in the Constitution, they mean common law. Okay? So, there is an ancient rule of law that says that the king, the sovereign, is always subject to his own court. That's why you have a court of claims. You see, the king declares the law, and he says, okay, he decrees it. This is what the law is. But the king cannot break the law, because if he does something contrary to his own law, all that means is he changed the law. So how are you going to enforce the law against the king? You can't. So what you do, they acknowledged in England, and we inherited in the United States, that sometimes a king has a moral obligation, maybe not a legal obligation, but he has a moral obligation. If an action by the king caused harm, even though he's not legally liable, he's morally liable. So they set up the court of claims, and that's the purpose of the court of claims. You go to the court of claims, you say, hey, king, come on, you know, pay for what you did. Okay, new tape, time out to flip.
Can you show us the document that launches the court of record? The number two document that shows us in writing how you do it.
Line two, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, paragraph two of that lawsuit?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Sure, we go to the example. Okay. Yeah. All right, we rolling again?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so the question is, how do you activate the court of record? Well, you do it in your action. Okay, so we'll go down here to the action. First amended action. Okay, and here it is, paragraph two. Can you see it on the screen? William Jones is one of the people of California, and in this court of record complains. That's it. That's it. That's activated. You are the plaintiff, and as the plaintiff, you have a right to choose your forum. I choose the forum specified in the California Constitution. All courts are courts of record. And remember, I own those courts as one of the people. Right?
Right?
See, if I own the government and the government owns the citizens, and I'm not a citizen, I'm one of the people, and I do not yield my sovereignty to the agencies which serve me, so I go into that court. That court's a court of record. And what's the definition of a court? It's the person and suit of the sovereign. Okay? That's in there somewhere, so you'll find it. But so combine that all together. I'm the person in suit of the sovereign. And I said it's a court of record, yes.
You did an earlier sheet that just said, this is a court of record all along.
Oh, that? Okay, sure, we'll go back to that. Gotcha. The definitions.
No, it's all along. This is a court of record. Right on that.
Yep, here we go. I think I know what you're talking about. Right here, court of record. There it is. This thing?
It's the case that came before the last one you showed. So this is a court of record.
You lost me. I talk a lot, but I forget what I say.
Just before the last one you showed? Then just before that one.
Yeah, well, my memory is erased. I have a destructive readout on my memory. So.
Don't walk in front of the camera.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry I can't fulfill that request. However, it's on the film. So, but what is the question relating to court of record? What is it that you really were digging for?
Not that. It's the way you presented it to the court. The way you presented it to the magistrate.
Right up there, number two, is what he presented.
Well, in the presentation to the magistrate is your original filing. That's what I showed you. That was the amended action.
Yeah.
The first amended action, which normally would be your action, but if you're doing a counterclaim, you would say a counterclaim, but you right there, that first paragraph, it is, you say you're one of the people, and this is a court of record. That's it, does it. You've decreed the law because you're one of the people. And you're sovereign, so you can decree that sovereignty. Okay? So, going back to this other here, the habeas corpus. So in the habeas corpus, you see, you as a sovereign are subject to your own court. And there have been cases, like there was this one king, he was presented with a problem. The chief judge said to him, if somebody who was of one of the nobility, and he didn't want to name any names, but he said if somebody were doing this and he was cheating on his noblewoman in these conditions, what would be the penalty? And the king said, well, with that, it would have to be death. Well, it turned out he was talking about the king. And so the court executed him. Be careful who you appoint in your court. Okay? So, I make it clear that this is a court of record. That means no authority for the judge to make any decisions. He's a magistrate. He cannot make any decisions unless I permit him. Unless I certify it. He wants something, he looks to me, I say, sure. Okay. Looks to the attorney, he says, sure. But I've already explained the difference. Okay? So, habeas corpus, that's what that is. Now, common law. What is the common law? You've all heard that it's custom and usage, right? But where do you point? How do you put some muscle behind that? Right? You say you want to run your court according to the common law. What is that common law? Now, you know how bureaucrats are. They like things in writing. They can't handle concepts for some reason. If you don't show it into writing, it doesn't mean beans to them. Well, I'm going to show you where the beans are. Okay? Confirmatio Cartarum. Magna Carta, basically, the nobleman got tired of the king conducting his wars and forcing them into service and taking their wealth, you know, to pay for the wars. So one day they cornered King John on the River Thames, and they presented this little document called the Magna Carta, and they said, sign it or we'll cut your head off. And so he signed it. Now, when he signed it, he had absolutely no intent of keeping his word, but they kind of had the upper hand. You remember, this is in the days when each nobleman had his own army, you know, his own military. The king would borrow the military from the nobleman to conduct his wars. And also, the Pope was kind of in charge there, too. And the Pope later blessed it and said, yeah, the Magna Carta is good. But the Pope really didn't intend to keep the word either. And they were just going to wait for a more opportune time when they built their political strength and they'd straighten this situation out. Well, you know, I guess God works in mysterious ways.
That's not true. The Pope is the author of it. I
read it. Well, fine, he authored it. I just said they presented it. Okay. Well, fine, if that's it. He says that the Pope authored the Magna Carta, right?
He thanked him. It's right in it. Read it.
Fine. But the point is, that I accept that for value, okay? Okay. Now, but the point that I'm getting at is this. Within a year, one of the two died, the king or the Pope. And I think it was like about 2-3 months later, the other one died. This created a power vacuum in both spheres. The king, the new king was King Edward, and the new pope, I can't remember who he was, but it created this power vacuum. You know, whenever you get a new leader in, he's got to establish his power base. He had enough power base to get to that position, but that doesn't mean he's going to be a success. I mean, we've had a lot of kings that only served 1 year, you know. And but you had this other power base called the noblemen, and they were still organized. And they didn't lose any time. First thing they did is they got King Edward to bless the Magna Carta, to reaffirm it. And they also got the new pope to reaffirm it. And they had to, because they didn't have the strength at that time. And then in succeeding kings, it was the Magna Carta was reaffirmed again. Is that correct? You know your history, right? Okay. So there you are. It was reestablished. Now, check this out. Confirmatio Cartarum. This was the second king, King Edward the First, and who followed King John. He signed the Confirmatio Cartarum. And here's the important point right here, starting with number 3. Okay? It says, and he says, Edward, by the grace of God, King of England and so forth, he's delivering his message. This is a writing by the king. And he says, and that our justices, sheriffs, mayors, and other ministers, which under us have the laws of our land to guide, shall allow the said charters pleaded before them in judgment in all their points. That is to wit, the great charter as the common law. Okay? So, if you are a defendant, you can demand that the Magna Carta be the common law. They can't force it on you. The common law is the common law, but if you demand that the Magna Carta be the common law, then the king's men, in other words, the judges and all those guys, sheriffs, whatever, they must accept that as the common law in writing. Okay? And this is an important thing. I got this out of a Bar Association book. Okay? That's where I found it. And you look at the Constitution of the United States and you look at the Constitution of California, they all support the common law. Well, what is a common law? This is what the common law is. The Confirmatio Cartarum, in other words, the confirming charter, says specifically that if you choose, then the Magna Carta is the common law. Now, there's a couple of neat things in the Magna Carta. Okay? Let me go down to the interpretation. It kind of distills it. Okay? Confirmatio Cartarum says the Magna Carta must be accepted as the common law by government. The Magna Carta is the supreme law. All other contrary law and judgments are void. And voluntary taxes cannot be made permanent. Where have you heard about that before? Okay. Now, I just picked out some highlights. There's more in those papers. But the issues that we're always dealing with, well, this is where, here's kind of like a quickie summary. Here I quote the Magna Carta, and then I give a brief, plain English explanation. So, Article 20 of the Magna Carta basically says the fine shall be proportional to the offense and shall only be imposed upon the testimony of non-government men. Okay? Okay? A villain, in the same way, if he fall under our mercy, shall be amerced, meaning fined, saving his wainage, and none of the aforesaid fines shall be imposed save upon oath of upright men from the neighborhood. Upright men are not government. Okay? Earls and barons shall not be amerced save through their peers, and only according to the measure of the offense. Similar thing. Okay? Now, look at this one. No sheriff, constable, coroners, or other bailiffs of ours shall hold the pleas of our crown. Plain English? No sheriff, no bailiff qualifies as a witness. Right. He cannot subject you to his law. Doesn't qualify. He cannot You remember, they say all of the, they have the proceedings, the people of California versus so-and-so, right? Or the people of the United States versus so-and-so. Well, who's signing that? Who signs that information? One of the district, either a district attorney, somebody. Well, that's prohibited under common law. If this is a court of record and it's going according to the common law, he's out. That's what that means to me. Okay? No constable or other bailiff of ours shall take the corn or other chattels of anyone except he straightway give money for them and can be allowed in a respite in that regard by the will of the seller. In other words, he can't confiscate your property. The rule of eminent domain also applies to personal property, which must be paid for when taken. Okay, that's basically what it's saying. Now, 30 is one you're going to like. No sheriff, nor bailiff of ours, nor anyone else shall take the horses or carts of any freeman for transport unless by the will of that freeman.
That's right.
All right, you're familiar with that modern problem, aren't you? That was 800 years ago. That's sovereign. Freeman is the sovereign in America. Mm-hmm. So, can't take your car without permission. However, if your car has a license plate, it's owned by the state, isn't it?
Right.
You're familiar with that. So, okay. All right. Let's see. Here's a. Now, 34 is your protection. Henceforth, the writ which is called precipe shall not be served on anyone for any holding so as to cause a free man to lose his court. Okay? If you're sovereign, you do what sovereigns do. What do sovereigns do? Well, one of the things they do is they have their own courts. Somebody violates your sovereign's law. Now, what qualifies? Basically, it boils down to this. Is there an injured party? No injury, no obligation.
Okay.
Well, did you demand a court of record? Did you make a counterclaim? No. Did you make a counterclaim?
No.
You did a countersuit. Or a suit, or an original suit, but you didn't make a counterclaim. Okay? It's very important to make a counterclaim. You want to stop that process until your lawsuit's settled. Of course, now, remember, I'm giving you theory. There's also practical. And so in practicality, they're going to move forward. Now, I haven't brushed up on this, Council on Judicial Performance in California. But there is a Council on Judicial Performance, and there's also a similar thing federally. Now, I can tell you how it used to be. And then there was something voted on by the citizens, and then they changed the rules somewhat. But here's what it used to be, and I know that there's got to be traces of this left. But it used to be that in section 900 and something or 9000 something of the rules of court, they had a procedure for complaining against a judge. And it used to be that you would if you sent a letter to them, the committee would receive it, the council would receive it, they look at it, based on what you tell them in the letter, they decide whether or not they'll check this further. Okay? So, if you had to beef or something, that was the word you got. Well, let the Council on Judicial Performance know. Write them a letter. But if you read further into the procedure, it says that if you give them an affidavit, they must investigate. They have no choice. Okay? Hardly anyone ever sent in an affidavit. They always sent a complaining letter. Okay? Now, they can't change your case, but they can make it hot for the judge. Okay? And I would say check out that procedure because there's still remnants. There's some... Yes?
I have to disagree because I've dealt with the Judicial Commission.
Got a mic.
Hey, you're not supposed to be asking questions.
Right, a microphone. Well, microphone.
You're supposed to be asking questions. You're supposed to be teaching.
Yeah.
Questions come after you're finished.
Oh, well, I think I've gone past your normal closing time, probably.
We're talking about closing. We're listening.
All right. Okay, well, if you can keep up with me, great.
You're
all right.
On track.
Okay. Well, Anyway, on the it's look, I've given you a lot of theory tonight, but don't forget practicality. I mean, there are people who will ignore you, okay? If push comes to shove and you know, they have the guns, you don't. Yep. But we don't give up. Look, just getting back on an everyday level, you know that robbery is illegal. So we created a law.